Hello and welcome to Untangled Resolution's presentation of The Problem is the Answer. I am your host, Batabi Livintombini, and I'm coming to you live from somewhere in New Jersey. Today, my guest is Maisha Walker, and we are talking about social networking for entrepreneurs. How do small business owners best leverage today's technology to manage and grow their businesses? You are listening to Beeswax by Michelle Webb. Sit back and listen while everyone gathers. I'll be back with you in just a moment. Everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm so glad that you've taken time to join us. I'm sure you're going to learn a lot from the show today, and I'm really excited about my guest. But first, I want to tell you about what you've just been listening to. You were listening to Beeswax by Michelle Webb, and it is on her CD called DC Istanbul. That's DC/Istanbul, and it's available for purchase on iTunes. Michelle is coming out with a new project pretty soon, and I'm really excited about the potential for it to come out, and I look forward to being able to share it with you at some time in the near future. So, to our show, and I have with me today, Maisha Walker, is a guru when it comes to marketing and social network marketing for small to medium-sized businesses, and she works specifically with entrepreneurs to help them to get the message across. So, Maisha, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Wonderful. And tell me a bit about what you do.
Well, Message Medium is my company, and we essentially are an internet marketing and website development firm. So what that means is we help businesses to create an online presence, everything from designing and building their website, whether it's their first website or a redesigned website, and then going through the different techniques that a small business owner can use to drive traffic and customers to that website. So everything from social media marketing to email marketing, search engine optimizing a website, a wide variety of techniques that we use to help businesses to be more visible and actually drive customers and potential customers to their website.
Wonderful. That's such a broad range of things that you do and services that you offer to business owners. I'm curious about making sure we understand what we mean by social media. So you listed off a number of services that you offer, but when people say social media, what are we talking about?
So social media is a really broad term, and there are definitely different definitions for it. I think the most common and the one that's most relevant to small business owners is pretty much thinking specifically about websites and websites that are tools that you can use. So probably the biggest three are Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. And they're essentially websites where you go onto the site, you create a profile for yourself, and through that profile you can interact with other people on the website. So typically, for example, LinkedIn, create a profile for yourself. Then you also create a company for your business. That's the same thing with Facebook. So create a profile for yourself first, and then you can go on and create a page for your business. But they all start with a profile, and then they allow you to add various kinds of content that you use to interact and display and communicate with other members of the website.
Okay, so that brings me to ask this question. It seems that everybody and their dog, literally, is jumping onto social media networking. Is it really for everyone and for every business?
Well, I think that social media has potential for just about every business. And the reason why I say that is we're all social. And for as far as I can tell, all businesses are run by humans and work with humans as their customers in one way or another. So because of that, every business is social. But there are definitely certain kinds of businesses and more to the point, certain kinds of people that are going to get a lot more benefit out of social media than others. If you tend to be someone who doesn't like to communicate a lot or doesn't like to share a lot of content or wants to stay very private, or if you feel that you don't like to write, you know, social media really may not be a good tool for you. It could be very profitable for your business, but I always like to tell people, pick the tools that are going to work best with the resources that you have, and your skill set and the skill set of the other members on your team are counted among those resources. So if you really want to use YouTube, but you don't have anybody on your team who understands video, maybe YouTube isn't the best thing for you to start with.
So what I'm hearing then is that there are different types of people for whom social media networking may be good, and then people who do want to involve social media networking, they need to choose platforms that actually are going to work, be it in terms of the resources, or even I'm curious about the kinds of business, service business versus people who sell goods, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, business that does. What kinds of factors would a need to consider one business versus the other?
Well, I think social tools, I mean, there are lots of examples of social tools working in both instances. I've heard a lot of people say that they think social media may be better for businesses like lounges and bars and restaurants, but I don't think that's entirely true. I mean, I think on the service side, especially if you have the ability to promote yourself as a knowledge expert, for example, there's a lot that you can do with social media to help spread the word about your expertise in a certain area and help people to go into more depth, to learn in more depth, I should say, about what your expertise is and just how much of an expert you are. Another area of social media that we haven't talked about yet is blogging. And I write, so I probably should have said this earlier, but I write a very popular blog for Inc. magazine. So you can go to inc.com/Maisha-Walker and you can find my blog.
And how do we spell your name?
So it's Maisha-Walker, W-A-L-K-E-R. And you can find, I write a lot about these topics specifically tailored to small businesses on that blog. So definitely go there. I've written a lot about LinkedIn and about Facebook and Twitter. I think that, you know, it really depends on how much of a brand and a voice you want either your own personal brand to have or you want your business to have. Social media is really all about communicating. So you have to be comfortable with sharing content and creating the kind of content that people will want to hear and interact with that's still relevant to your business, whether you're doing a business-to-business or business-to-consumer.
Well, then I have a question about content. You talked about establishing yourself as an expert in an area, as a subject matter expert. And so it brought to mind the question about what actually are you bringing forward to people when you use social media networking? I think that for some people, the thought is, okay, I've got this product or this service, and I'm going to sell my service online. But what I'm hearing from you seems to be a little more indirect.
Yeah, well, it depends. So there are definitely different ways that you can use social media to both promote your business as well as to sell your products directly. LinkedIn, for example, is a great tool for just helping to build your social network so that when you're looking for particular resources or you're trying to establish a strategic partnership, you can use LinkedIn to find the people that you want to connect with. It's an amazing tool that way, and I've actually had people find me on LinkedIn and become my clients because they found me on LinkedIn, they saw my background, and I fit what they were looking for. So it can definitely help you to simply be more visible in places like LinkedIn and have more connections on LinkedIn so that when people are searching for someone that who provides the service you provide, you will show up, and that'll increase your chances of being the one that gets hired. On a business-to-consumer, well, not just business-to-consumer, but in any instance where you're trying to sell a specific product or a specific service, both LinkedIn and Facebook and other tools have specific areas where you're able to do that. So LinkedIn now, on the company page that you create for your business, you can list the products and services that you offer right on LinkedIn. So LinkedIn is trying to give businesses more of a space to sell directly, without, you know, feeling like you are going against the etiquette of the LinkedIn culture, which is generally not sales focused.
Exactly. And I did hear that, and I myself, when I am, you know, going to broadcast a show, for example, I have an option to send a message to LinkedIn saying that I'm doing the show. So I felt that kind of discomfort because I understand that LinkedIn has a specific etiquette. And actually, do you mind if we segue into that for a minute?
Sure.
Or maybe we could do that a little bit later when we get into the specifics. I'm thinking off the top of my head here. We could get into the specifics of each site, but that's something we want to come back to, talking about etiquette in social networking or media, social media networking. And I want to, I'm actually going to make a note right now. So we were talking about indirect versus direct selling, and you got a little bit into how there is an expectation in terms of etiquette. But then also there are opportunities for people to do both indirect and direct selling.
Exactly.
You also mentioned something about people finding you on LinkedIn, and that brought to mind the whole question of people finding you in general. The internet is huge. There's a ton of information out there. And you know, I know for myself as a mediator, there are tons of mediators out there. How do people find me?
So that is an excellent question. And, you know, the point, I think, to a large extent of social media is to enable more people to find you, first of all, but also to maintain a relationship with you without either one of you having to do a whole lot of work.
Okay.
So, you know, what I call social media's killer app is basically the idea that you can connect with lots of people from all over the world, and you can stay in touch with them using these social tools by sending out a single message that goes out to everyone that you're connected to. And because you're now communicating with all of those people on a regular basis, you stay top of mind for them for whatever service it is or product it is that you provide. So you can look at businesses like Zappos as a great example. Their CEO uses Twitter heavily. They have many people on their staff who blog. They take advantage of using video on their website. They also use comments, which is another form of social media that actually lives on your own website. So they take advantage of using customer feedback directly on the product pages to help guide customer buying habits. So Zappos is a great example of a business. You know, with LinkedIn, we were talking more about a service-based business like mine, but Zappos is a great example of a business that's using a variety of social tools to create a certain culture, as well as to stay top of mind for their customers. And they, if you go to the Zappos Facebook page is a great example of a business that's actually using social media for direct sales. So when you go to the Zappos Facebook page, their product listed right there on the page, and you can click on them and buy them.
Okay. Well, and, you know, I'm a Zappos fan and a Zappos customer. As a matter of fact, I've called sometimes, and they call me like a gold level customer.
Oh, that's great. That's
so
great.
But I actually haven't visited their Facebook page yet, so I'm going to make sure to do that and see how it is that they've set that up.
Yeah, you have to check it out. I mean, one of the things that I really like to help people understand is, you know, I sort of chuckle when people call me a social media guru, because really nobody's a guru in this business. I mean, it's all so new and everyone is really trying to experiment and do fun and cool and interesting and engaging things and just trying to figure out what works. So, you know, I think for a lot of small businesses, one of the best things you can do if you're really serious about playing around with these tools, clearly the first thing to do is just to get started, get your profile set up, get them filled out. But as you're looking for ways to share content and different things you can do on social media, I definitely recommend looking at what other people are doing. Look at what other companies and other businesses in your industry or totally outside your industry are doing. Keep in mind, of course, that when you look at a company like Zappos, they probably have several full-time staff members working on their Facebook page and figuring out the strategies they're going to use. So take it with a large grain of salt in terms of understanding what the resources are you have to implement these things that you see. So a lot of times they look very simple and very easy, but somebody spent $100,000 to make it look like that.
Oh.
And to, you know, to go through all of the process of designing it and building it, managing it, maintaining it, updating it, sometimes can be very expensive. So just, you know, as you're looking at these things, keep in mind that there are costs involved in getting these things set up. But there's great case studies out there and examples of businesses who are doing really cool things with social media. And I definitely suggest learn from their successes. They've spent lots of money doing great things and doing things that completely failed. So look at the things that are successful and winning, and you can try to, you know, copycat that a little bit.
What would be a couple that a person who's really interested in this go and research?
I would suggest, well, Zappos, obviously. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great examples also of nonprofits who are doing great things with social media. There's a feature called Causes, which is very exciting. It's a Facebook app that lets people donate right from Facebook and keep track of their donation amounts. So what I would suggest, there's two places. Obviously, I do case studies on my column for Inc. on my blog. So you can go to inc.com/Maisha-Walker. Especially if you look for my LinkedIn case studies. I've done a number of those that were really very popular and helped a lot of people. Also Twitter, I did a whole piece on Twitter and all the different ways that people are using Twitter, the different categories that Twitter users fall into, and in order to help people understand which category you might fit into, because there's a lot of different ways that people can use it, and they don't all involve tweeting out what you had for breakfast. So I think, you know, there's a lot of different options there. There's another website that I like called Social Media Examiner. That's socialmediaexaminer.com. And they do a lot of great case studies as well. But you can also just go to Google, everybody's favorite website, go to Google and type in social media case study or Facebook case study or something specific for your industry, and you'll find a lot of great content.
Wonderful. Actually, I also wanted folks to know one easy way to get to a lot of your content, not only with what you write for Inc. Magazine, but what's on your own website, which is just chock full of information. I have to tell you, Maisha's website, I visit it as often as I can to get as much information as I can, and there's a ton of stuff that she has put out there. It's amazing. So what is your website?
It's my company name, which is Message Medium. So that's message like a voicemail message. And then medium as in a psychic, .com, messagemedium.com.
Wonderful. And it's just that simple. So, you know, visit her website. You can find a lot of the information that we're talking about today and a lot more than what we'll be able to cover. So I want to ask a question I think that a lot of people have when they decide to start a website, and I think that in the beginning a lot of people thought that it would be like hanging out a shingle, that they'd be able to build a website and, you know, if you build it, they will come.
Right.
So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about that. What can people actually expect to achieve by putting up a website, and how can they maximize the benefit that they receive from having one?
Great.
Okay, so we're going to be back in just a moment. And I'm going to play a piece for you. You know, the piece I was originally going to play today is Valerie June, and I'm mentioning that because I'm going to tell you about her performance in New York City when we come back from the break. It was originally going to be that, but for some reason it hasn't come up in my studio.
Oh, no.
So I can't play that for you, but I'm going to play music from another wonderful, wonderful musician, songwriter, Somi, and she's fantastic and fabulous too. If you ever have a chance to hear her live, I suggest that you take that opportunity. Her name is spelled S-O-M-I. You can Google her,
save her website.
You can Google her and find out where she is and then also buy her music. I really encourage you to do that as well. She's an independent artist, and we want to support our independent artists. So here is a piece from Somi. everybody. We're back. Thank you so much for tuning in. The piece that you just heard is by Somi, and it is called Be Careful, Be Kind. And I'm glad to have been able to play that piece for you. It reminds me of what's happening in the world today. If you were watching the news out and about, you may have seen that there are protests going on in a lot of cities around the world, actually, and here in the United States as well. I know here in New York City I was here, and there's Occupy Wall Street is going on, and I broadcasted from there last week. So if you want to hear a bit about what's going on there from the perspective of people who are actually down there, tune in to the show from last week. You'll find it on the website just where you are listening to the show right now. Go into the archive and you'll find from last week the broadcast that I did from Occupy Wall Street. One of the things I found to be really amazing in the time that's down there is the dedication that everybody has to being careful and kind to each other as they are during pretty difficult circumstances that get worse as time goes by. They've been there September 7th. Some people have been there since there. A lot of people have been there living outside. So they've done a lot of work to make sure that things are run as smoothly as possible, but it's still a very challenging situation. And so everybody who is there has to commit themselves to being careful and kind. And so I thank Somi for that song. Again, her music is also available on iTunes. Just Google her and you'll be able to find it. I also want to let you know about Valerie June, whose piece, unfortunately, I was not able to play for you, but she is somebody that I've played here on the show before. She's one of my favorite artists, musician, songwriter, and the style of music she plays, she calls it moonshine roots music. She's from Tennessee originally, and her music is really organic and authentic, and I encourage anybody who has a chance to listen to her music to do so. So go ahead and Google Valerie June, V-A-L-E-R-I-E, June, as in the month of June, and learn more about her music. She will be in New York City on the 28th of October at Terra Blues, T-E-R-R-A-B-L-U-E-S, all one word, Terra Blues, October 28th of this year. So go ahead and check her out either on the Terra Blues website or on her own website, and I really encourage you to go to her website, buy her music, and I look forward to seeing her when she is here in the city. I want to tell you a bit about Untangled Resolutions, which is how this show is brought to you. Untangled Resolutions is a private practice in conflict management and dispute resolution. Contact me for workshops on conflict management, or if you need a mediator for your organization. Sometimes things happen. There are disagreements that can seriously shake up an organization. You can call in a mediator to help. Also, it's helpful for companies to have ways to manage conflict so that it's predictable. Everybody knows what the process is. And we call it conflict management because we understand that conflict will always be with us. You can resolve disputes, but there will always be conflict. And it is possible to look at conflict as a positive, as a way that companies can learn and grow, communicate, develop. And that can happen when you have a good conflict management plan. So that's one of the things that Untangled Resolutions also does is conflict management for small to medium-sized organizations. So contact me for that too. And you can contact me at www.123untangled.com. That's 123untangled, the D.com. There's another opportunity to take advantage of the services that I offer. How are your negotiation skills? Is your idea of negotiation to pick a high number and go for the most? That's not negotiation. Come to my class and learn how to use the principles of negotiation and mediation to maximize your results as a negotiator. I'm teaching at a place called New Work City. It's a really awesome co-working environment where lots of entrepreneurs are able to come in on a daily basis or weekly basis and do their work. Well, I'm there in the evening from 7 to 9. The next class is going to be October 25th. That is a Tuesday night, 7 to 9, October 25th. And New Work City is located at 412 Broadway in Manhattan near Canal Street. 412 Broadway in Manhattan near Canal Street. Again, if you want more information about that, go ahead and send me an email at info@123untangled.com. That's info@123untangled.com. Finally, I want you to know that if you have questions for Maisha, if you're listening now and you have a question, call in 818-532-9789. The number again is 818-532-9789. All right, I'm glad to welcome Maisha back to the show. And before we took the break, we were talking about websites and what kinds of expectations that people can have when they put up a website for being able to drive business. I think a lot of people, as I said before the break, sort of thought that putting up a website was like putting up the shingle. If you put it, if you build it, they will come.
Right.
So how did that turn out?
Well, for most people, that doesn't work so well.
Okay.
You know, it's interesting because I've seen a lot of examples, obviously having been doing this for 14 years, I've seen a lot of examples of different kinds of businesses, different sized businesses. And the truth of the matter is, no matter how big or small you are, you have to market. You have to spread the word consistently about the fact that you exist.
And so, setting up a website is not marketing?
It's a piece of it.
Okay.
So it's interesting. Even if you set up, you know, it's about different layers of marketing. So even, you know, a lot of people will set up a Facebook page in order to market their business and drive traffic to their website. But then even when you create a Facebook page, you have to market the Facebook page.
Hmm.
So no matter what you're putting up anywhere, you can't just sort of sit back and rely on, you know, the pre-existing audience to happen upon whatever it is that you've done. You always have to spread the word aggressively about what you're doing. So getting people to your website, getting people to your Facebook page, getting people to your blog, there are lots of ways you can do that. You know, one of the biggest ways that people consider is optimizing for search engines.
So search engine optimization.
Search engine optimization.
You know, I've heard that term thrown around a lot, and I think there are people who are a little bit confused about how precisely that works. So how does that work?
So we could do several shows just on that. So, but I, two notes. I'll give as quick a synopsis as I can, but also note that I've written a lot on this topic. So you can go to messagemedium.com and find the archive of the articles I've written that really explain how search engine optimization works from the perspective of what a small business owner needs to know.
Okay.
So the sort of quick and dirty SEO explanation, basically, when Google, because that's usually the search engine that everybody's trying to get found in, indexes the web, essentially it indexes the content of each page.
So and when I say indexing, what does that mean?
So it basically just means that it is storing the fact that this website exists, or this web page, I should say, exists, because it recognizes each individual page of your website, not just your website as a whole. So when Google recognizes that it exists and stores that it exists, it's going to also recognize the kind of content that's on that page. So when I say content, I mean what text and what images are on that page.
So the words and the pictures.
Now, the pictures Google can't read yet.
Okay.
Although it's trying to. They're working on it. But so people understand what the pictures are by things like the file name of the picture, the tags that go into the HTML code surrounding the picture, especially something called the alt attribute, which is getting a little bit techy, but also the text, words that surround the picture. So what other words are on the page? So when Google is trying to decide which pages should show up first for a particular phrase, so if you were to type in chocolate ice cream, for example, and Google is trying to decide what website page should be number one for chocolate ice cream, it's going to look at two factors. One is it's going to look at the content of that page. So how many times is the word chocolate ice cream, the words chocolate ice cream mentioned on that page? It's also going to look at some of the surrounding pages. So the other pages of the website can find from the page that it's found. How many chocolate ice cream mentioned on those pages? Many pages are mentioned in chocolate ice cream. So that one is just, it's keyword that's being searched, how often is that keyword actually showing up on the individual page as well as the pages surrounding it? The other major factor is incoming, what we call incoming links, and this concept of link building. So how many other websites, completely separate websites, are linking in to that website? So if I created a website all about how much I love chocolate ice cream, and then you had a website that talked about how to make chocolate ice cream, you know, one of the things I might do is I might link my website to yours. If I do that, that's not going to help me with the search engines, but it's definitely going to help you.
Okay.
Because I'm linking into your website, and so the search engines look at that and they say, wow, this website must have great content mm-hmm. because people are linking into her. Mm-hmm. So
this is sort of establishing, if you want to know about chocolate ice cream, a ton of other people, we hope it's a ton of other people,
right.
have decided that you're the expert on chocolate ice cream,
exactly.
you're the best source for chocolate ice cream, so we're going to put you.
Exactly. So you'll find websites like Wikipedia that will always show up at the top of the rankings, and it's because lots of people will link the Wikipedia for, you know, descriptions and explanations and definitions of things. So when you're looking through the website, the search engine results pages, you'll notice that very often the sites that show up at the top are very large sites, and especially sites that have a lot of content and act as a resource. So about.com, Wikipedia. You'll also find some very large retailers like Amazon, because people are linking into Amazon to say, oh, you want to buy this book? Here's a link. You can buy it on Amazon. You'll also find very often university websites. They've got tons and tons of research that they might publish around a certain topic, and so people will link into them. So basically, SEO, which is what search engine is called, is after what are the words that you get ranked for, how many times do those words appear in your website, and how many pages do you have or do that, and then how many incoming links do you have from other people coming to yours.
So then couldn't I just make my content so that, you know, chocolate ice cream is the 10th word on every paragraph? Or
you could. Although the search engines will – so there are a lot of tricks that people sometimes try to use to fill those three goals. And generally, if you just started with building websites and you think up something, more than likely someone's already thought of it, including Google. And what unfortunately will happen, or fortunately, because this is what makes Google's results useful, is Google will actually, if they find you doing these sort of tricks, like trying to put keywords in 10 million times and having no other content on the page, or you know, having all the keywords listed at the bottom, you know, 100 times and putting the text the same color as the background color of the page. That's another one people
really?
Come up with. Yeah, so that what happens is people don't see it because it's the same color,
oh.
but the search engines will see it because they're not looking at color. They're just
looking
at text.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah, so, well, no.
Not anymore.
So what will happen is the search engines will actually ban your domain name.
Oh.
It gets very bad. And so you'll even find some, you know, some people have gone out and bought domain names that were previously owned and then became available. And this is, yes, this is what will happen.
Maisha's reacting to the look of horror on my face.
Yeah, this is what will happen. People will burn out these domain names. So they'll buy a domain name. They'll use all these horrible search engine tricks to get it ranked, and then as soon as it gets banned, they drop it, but by that time, they've already done whatever they wanted to do with it, like put up a phishing page or spammed people or whatever it is, and then they just move on, they let it expire, and they move on to another domain name. So
somebody else comes along, picks it up,
unfortunately,
buys it, and then discovers that they've been banned.
Yep, that they're wondering, why is it so impossible for me to get my website ranked?
Oh, that's
It doesn't happen a lot, but uh-huh. It does happen.
Oh, my. So it's important. So how can a person then make sure that they're not breaking the rules on the one hand but are maximizing the opportunities on the other?
As long as all the content on your page is visible to the human eye
mm-hmm.
and not, you know, teeny tiny text at the bottom, I mean visible and readable
yeah.
to the human eye, and as long as it actually makes sense, so you can read the text and it makes complete sense, then you're probably fine.
Okay.
That's
okay.
The rule of thumb.
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about it. I mean, there are a lot of different ways when you start trying to get these keywords into your website. Mm-hmm. There are a list of 9 that I've sort of broken it down to explain where you should start putting all the words in your site. So again, it's a little bit too much to get into here, but I have an article where I explain all of it. It's on my blog page, and you can also go to my website at Message Medium and find that article in the archive. It's called 9 Please Use Your Keywords for SEO Power. Very
awesome.
Exciting.
Awesome. And I'm impressed that you can remember the name of your article, because I sure can't always remember the name of the stuff that I've written.
Well, you know, it's funny. It helps that, you know, I get emails from people and they ask me these questions. I say, oh, I wrote an article about that. Here it is. And I copy and paste it.
Wonderful. Well, I think it's a good time now to talk about etiquette then. We're talking about SEO etiquette in a sense. And so what about social media marketing etiquette in general?
Yeah, so I think it's really important, and not just for social media, but for any kind of communication that you're going to do, especially in the professional world, to understand the rule of the environment in which you're operating. So the way that you would communicate with somebody for a one-on-one consultation where that person's your client might be a little bit different from the way that you communicate with a strategic partner on the phone, or the way that you would communicate when sending out an email blast to 10,000 people. Each medium has its own etiquette, as well as different kinds of etiquette depending on the context of why you're communicating with that person. So I think one of the ways this is really interesting is in terms of spam laws. So everyone knows that it's technically against the law for you to send out mass emails to groups of people who haven't asked to be on your mailing list. But there is some flexibility there. So the law does allow you, for example, to communicate on a regular basis with your existing clients.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, you have to just be careful to not assume that everybody wants to hear everything that you have to say in sort of every medium that's available.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start to think specifically about social media, I think this becomes even more important, because it is just so easy for people to send messages out. You know, Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn, they give you a box with just a button, right? So you log in, you can type whatever you want in that box and hit that button, and suddenly everybody in your network has that message.
Right.
You know, the same thing with emailing people through those tools. LinkedIn has an ability for you to send emails out to up to 50 people at a time. LinkedIn limits it, which I think is one of the many reasons why that site is so useful, because it really tries to minimize spam. Facebook, you can send out messages to almost your whole Facebook network. So you just have to be really careful about not abusing those features. I have, you know, a person that I'm connected with on LinkedIn who shall remain nameless, who sends an email out probably once a month that's almost the same email, and it's basically a solicitation for his services.
Mm.
And it's really irritating. You know, I have to respect the person for being aggressive and wanting to make sure that people know what he does, but after getting this email 5 or 6 times, you know, I'm seriously considering not being connected with this person anymore because it's annoying.
Now, is it because it's coming through LinkedIn and there's a different etiquette for LinkedIn than anything else?
No, because it's completely self-serving.
Uh-huh.
So by sending out this email, it does nothing at all to help me.
Okay.
Right? So if you're sending out a newsletter, so for example, in my email newsletter, we have a list of our services at the bottom of the newsletter, but the rest of the newsletter is not about us.
Mm-hmm.
It's about information that people have joined and subscribed to this list would want to know.
Okay.
So when are the next classes that are coming up that I'm going to be teaching if you want to take a class? Interesting news, like if there's a fun contest that we heard about, or a great article that I wrote or that somebody else wrote that is going to be very useful. We do case studies in our newsletter to help people understand not only how these different tools can be used, but it's also a nice way for people to understand how other clients have used our services. So we try to make sure that we're sending out content that's actually useful to the reader, and then our services are also kind of mixed in there.
Okay.
The problem with this person's emails is that it's only his services over and over and over again. I mean, it doesn't help me at all.
Right.
So you need to be careful that when you're communicating with people, that your communications are not exclusively self-serving.
Yes. So that is wonderful information for people to know, because I think that a lot of people, again, think it's about hanging out a shingle. So the message that I'm going to send out to everybody is, here's what I do, how much I charge for it, and how you can contact me. And what I'm learning from you is that really what's developed is in order for folks to drive the traffic, you need to offer something that's going to offer solutions rather than
absolutely. I mean, if I can use you as an example,
sure.
Is that okay?
Okay.
So, you know, I think what you did. No, I think what you did, for example, with this radio show is great.
Mm-hmm.
So you have experts who come on the show, mm-hmm. who share their expertise for free with your audience.
Right.
It's advice that people want to know. It's very useful and powerful. Mm-hmm. And then you have an opportunity to talk about what you do, to talk about the relationships you've built with all of us. And your skills as a mediator and a relationship manager and a relationship expert.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, during the course of the show, you might mention, oh, this is what I do, and here's how you can get in touch with me, and if you need help in these areas, please contact me. I think it's really important for businesses to do that, to make sure people do know, why you're here and, you know, the underpinnings for why you're broadcasting. But at the same time, you have a really nice blend of marketing yourself and marketing your business and marketing those relationships that you've built and giving people great content that they want to use and want to know.
So I'm doing the right thing.
You're doing the right thing.
Oh, that's so good to hear.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. That is so awesome to hear. And so this then is one of those ways that you can communicate with people. And then, you know, we talked about there's Facebook, LinkedIn, there's Twitter, there's doing a website. There's MailChimp,
mm-hmm.
for example.
For email marketing.
Right. And it's just one of them. There's Constant Contact is
right.
another one. So there are a number of platforms that a person can actually choose to use to do all this communicating. But just listing all of those things makes me feel exhausted.
I know.
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
How do you manage all of that?
Now, that's a great question. And, you know, it's funny. When I teach my classes and do speaking engagements, I have this one slide that I like to use to scare people.
Oh, no.
And it's basically a list of, you know, and it's not even comprehensive, but it's a list of all the different marketing, both online and offline marketing techniques that you can use to grow your business. And there must be a list of 50 things on page. And the point is that, yes, when you see that list, you should feel scared and overwhelmed, because the point is you're not supposed to be doing all of those things right from the beginning.
Okay.
It is impossible as a small business owner to be able to tackle 50 different things and do it well. So your job, and this is one of the reasons why it takes some time for businesses to grow,
mm-hmm.
your job is to pick one or pick two, really maximize them, leverage it. If you're going to hire someone to come in and maybe get you there faster, that's an option. You know, obviously, that's one of the reasons why people hire us,
mm-hmm.
because we can just help them get there faster.
Mm-hmm.
But your goal is to pick one or two tools, maximize those tools, learn those tools. How can you optimize them? What's the best way to really use them, not only for your business, but for your own particular flair and your personality and your skill set. So figuring out how you can optimize these tools to drive as much traffic and revenue as they can for you. And then once you've got that down, typically what happens is you'll outsource it to somebody else. You'll bring in a VA or an intern and let them sort of manage some of the day-to-day pieces of that tool so that you can move on and learn something else.
Wonderful idea. Actually, I'm thinking about an intern right now.
Interns are great. They're great. Just remember that, you know, we're in New York. You do have to pay them.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to talk about that.
But interns can be fantastic.
Okay. Well, excellent. And the point being that, you know, people can feel pressured to be using every single resource that's out there. And that's not necessarily so. Most of the time.
Yeah, most of the time. Quality over quantity.
Exactly.
And I also think, it's important. I think a lot of times in the beginning, people are not sure which tool is going to work for them. And
mm-hmm.
so they like to sort of cast a wide net and try out a bunch of different things. And I think that's smart, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good idea. See what fits for you. You know, one of the other things that we do is I help people to narrow it down. So I can say, well, these five tools are probably going to be a good option for you. So go ahead and try those and see what you think, mm-hmm. as opposed to going out and trying all 20. Mm-hmm. You know, I can sort of narrow the landscape and say, you know, those 15 are going to be a waste of your time.
Right.
Focus on these five. Mm-hmm. And then you try out those five and see how things, see where you personally feel most comfortable.
Right. Well, listen, here's a question for you. A lot of the platforms that we've talked about are pretty user-friendly, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and so forth. Anybody can set up an account pretty easily on their own. I mean, you know, I don't want to call it my mom. My mom's actually really tech savvy and really, really scared. She was sending text messages before I was.
Oh, that's
In fact,
brilliant.
I've made this joke before. It's not, it's the truth. I
that's
only
so
started text messaging when she sent me one.
Oh,
and I said,
so
okay,
great.
That's enough. But, you know, anybody can set up. When it comes to websites, however,
right,
that can be a little bit more involved. And so I'm interested in what should a person be thinking about when it comes to setting up a website. I know that there are some platforms
right.
that say, okay, you are, you know, we've got these templates and then you're going to set up. Other people hire website developers.
Right.
So I'm interested in knowing what is the better thing to do, and then if you're going to hire someone, what do you need to look for?
Right. So, again, we could probably do, like, several shows on that. But the quick and dirty, again, is basically so a lot of it is about two things. One is what kind of site are you building?
Mm-hmm.
And then the second thing is what's your budget?
Okay.
So everybody has a certain amount of money that they can allocate to creating this online presence.
Mm-hmm.
And what I usually recommend is get the best that your money can buy.
Mm-hmm.
So define what that number is,
mm-hmm.
even if it's a range, like I have between 1 and 3,000 to spend, or
mm-hmm.
I have between 5 and 10,000, or I have up to 1,000 or up to 650, whatever that number is,
mm-hmm.
be clear about where you stand. And then go out and find the best that you can for that money.
Mm-hmm.
So, the other thing is the two major distinctions are basically if you're building an e-commerce website where you're going to do online retail and
so people
sell
are going to come to your website
collect credit
to
cards.
Actually
right.
buy things.
So people are coming to your site to buy things and you have to be able to accept credit card payments.
Mm-hmm.
That's a major distinction.
Okay.
If you're not doing that in a big way, then your options are a lot simpler. Generally, for those who are going to be doing online retail, I usually recommend going with one of the online services. So a site like Shopify is a great option, or Volusion, which I know is kind of an odd name. It's V-O-L-U-S-I-O-N. And Shopify is S-H-O-P-I-F-Y. So, so I think both of those are great options because setting up an e-commerce site from scratch and having it be the full-featured e-commerce where no one knows who your payment processor is, they don't see PayPal on your site, being able to do that is going to start at $10,000.
Oh, my.
It's just a very complicated process
mm-hmm.
with a lot of moving parts.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking minimum 10 grand to do
mm-hmm.
that. So I usually recommend that people start with one of the simpler month-to-month services like Shopify or Volusion. And then after a few years, you may decide to stay with Shopify, and then you may outgrow it, or you may even decide, you know what, this wasn't really right for me,
mm-hmm.
and then you've only spent your monthly amount of $40 instead of spending a whole 10 grand up
front. Sure,
So I think that for e-commerce, those are great ways to go. If you have only one product or you're not really doing e-commerce, then I usually recommend building a site with a content management tool like WordPress,
okay.
which is a great piece of software. That lets you not only build a blog, but build a whole website, and then you have the option of whether or not you want to have the blog features of WordPress turned on.
Okay.
So I think that that can be great, and usually for those situations, you're going to hire someone.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and just to confirm, I'm not talking about WordPress.com. I'm talking about getting a hosting account, having someone install the WordPress software on your hosting account, and then configuring and building that site for you on your own hosting account.
Okay.
I don't generally recommend that people use WordPress.com for anything.
Okay.
That's a whole other conversation.
So
yeah, those are the two things that I would recommend. And again, you know, you're really focusing on, am I doing e-commerce? Am I not doing e-commerce? If I am doing e-commerce, am I selling like one or two products? In which case, I don't need a full e-commerce solution. I could just use PayPal. Or am I going to be selling, you know, 50 products, 100 products, in which case I recommend starting with a Shopify. If you're not doing e-commerce, my general recommendation is to use a tool like WordPress. There's also Joomla and Drupal, and there's lots of Squarespace. There are lots of content management tools out there for people to choose from. But I really suggest that if you're going to have a non-e-commerce site, that you get your own hosting account and get the software installed so that you have total control over that site.
Okay. So we have about a minute left, and I do want to make sure, because I'm not sure I'm understanding what you mean by getting your own hosting site.
Gotcha. So getting your own hosting account, basically when you use a Shopify or a Volusion, those are full packages. So you pay them $40 a month. They're giving you a basic website that you set up yourself, but it's a, you know, sort of click point and click process. It's a do-it-yourself process. They're also hosting that website for you, and they provide the design templates for you. So you pay them $40 a month, and you get almost everything. If you're doing e-commerce, there's some other pieces you have to fit into that, but it's almost everything. When you do your own hosted, you basically pay a company like ours or GoDaddy or HostGator a monthly fee, and that website gets hosted on their hosting platform. And then you build the website, usually from scratch, on that hosting account. So every website needs a place to be hosted. Mm-hmm. All of them have to be hosted on a computer somewhere.
Okay.
So the question is just, is your hosting wrapped up with the site development software, mm-hmm. or is it separate?
Okay. Now it's a lot clearer.
Yeah.
I understand that. So if people want to know more about this, do you have content about that on your website?
I do. I do. I wrote, it's one of the first pieces that I wrote for Inc. So, yeah, I have content all about setting up your first website, mm-hmm. how to get a website for less than $10 a month. I mean, all sorts of great stuff.
Okay.
I also published a book on that topic called Website Fundamentals for Entrepreneurs. So if anyone is interested, you can find the book on my website also.
That's fantastic. And I think we're going to have to leave it there. Any questions that you have remaining that, you know, listeners have, when I say you, I mean, I'm talking about the listeners, that you have remaining, I invite you to visit Maisha's website, messagemedium.com. There's the book, and I can attest to it being chock-a-block full of information. Any question that you have should be answered there. Thank you so much, Maisha, for being here.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
Awesome. All right. Well, I hope that you have learned a lot about this. If you have more questions, do feel free to send me an email, info@123untangled.com, or visit Maisha's website, and you'll find a way to be able to reach her as well. This is such an important topic as people are becoming more entrepreneurial. We have all of these resources available to us. It's important, though, that we figure out how to use the resources in a way that really maximizes our time and leverages good things that we can get out of them. So I thank you for joining me, and join me again next week for another brand new topic. We're going to leave you with Somi again, and this song is called Prayer to the Saint of the Brokenhearted. Do check her out on iTunes and buy her music. Have a wonderful week, everyone. See you again next week, or talk to you again next week. All right. Well, have a wonderful week. Bye-bye.
Down and sweep over my bed, sweet saint of the broken hearted. Come down, down, down. Thank you. run by till now. And it ain't just like yesterday. From silence over my bed, sleep pain of a broken heart. From silence over my bed, sleep pain of a broken heart. Maybe still I might be, Maybe still I might be, Babu ni me choca, mugi ni idea.